Thanks for listening to Schlereth than Evans On Demand, brought to you by Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. If you're in the market for replacement windows, there's only one place to turn. That's Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. Visit them online at windowsforyourhome.com.
Every morning at 8 a.m., we take the best question you have for Mark Schlereth using hashtag question mark on social media and the text line. And now it's time for Question Mark.
Here's a good one from Wade, following up on this whole Case Keenum, is he here to mentor Paxton Lynch? He asked, question mark, how is having Case here going to help Lynch fix his inaccurate throws and inability to read defenses?
Well, I mean, reading defenses is about learning and understanding and studying. That, I mean, now, it doesn't help you. Here's the deal. Like, you can learn all that stuff on a, you know, on a grease board or studying film. You can look at it all and you can see it. It's plain as day. It looks different when you're on a football field. It just, you know, you're not looking at a screen. You're actually on the field. So it's going to look different, but it can certainly help you process, you know, what the look is, what they run out of that look. All that studying is like, hey, every time they're in this, like this particular defense, they're running this coverage or they're running this blitz, or you got to be alert for this. So it certainly could help Paxton Lynch kind of understand the game, assimilate the game, like increase his kind of quote unquote football acumen. The issue that you get into is, can you take that on the field, and can you process information quickly on the field that you see? Can you take the stuff that you learn in a classroom, and can you use that information that you learn in the classroom to make you a better player on the field? It's the difference, you know, that's the same as, you know, weight room muscles versus on the field muscles. I mean, I've seen plenty of guys that have great weight room muscles that, you know, or weak as kittens on a football field. Why? I don't know. Why that strength doesn't translate or transfer to a field? I really don't know.
What were your muscles?
I had both weight room muscles and field muscles. It was incredible.
It's time to dispense some justice.
Now, what do you need me to do? Bench? Leg press? Bring it. And then on.
Really? Wait a minute. Whoa. Leg press?
Oh, yeah.
I thought you had turkey legs.
I do have, but they're strong. They're strong. Like, if I was a turkey, like, and you love turkey legs, and you'd be like, oh, I can't wait to bite into this turkey leg, you'd bite into it and be like gristle. You'd be like, this is a horrible turkey leg.
Mm-hmm.
It's just all gristly muscle.
Right.
Yeah.
That was you.
Oh, gristle legs. They call me old gristle legs, Mike. Look at old gristle legs over there.
Let's get that trending on the RamosLaw.com text line, shall we? 303-713-1043. Hey, pork chop and gristle leg, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
All right.
So old gristle legs, that guy. Oof, man.
But do
man
you believe, let me follow up on Wade's question with one of my own. Do you believe that Paxton Lynch is just one good, solid mentorship away from figuring it all out?
No. You see, here's the deal. I mean, obviously you gotta want it. You gotta wanna study. You gotta wanna prepare. You gotta wanna, like, the one thing you can never, there's no combine test for it. There's none of that. The one thing you just don't know until you know, until a guy gets an opportunity, is how quickly does that guy's brain process information? Because you don't have to be intelligent, smart, to process information quickly. And, you know, and just because you're smart, you're intelligent, you're great at the books, and you're great in the classroom, that doesn't mean you're going to process information quickly either. That's a completely different deal. And, you know, that is just like your ability to, you know, your God-given athleticism to run 40s or to jump high or to have quick twitch muscles and all that stuff, that's hand of God. And your ability to process information quickly also, you gotta win the genetic lottery. And some guys win the genetic lottery athletically and they don't win it processing wise. And again, you don't have to be smart to have an elite level processor. And just because you're stupid doesn't mean you don't have an elite level processor. That's the maddening part of the draft. You can get the best athlete in the world and you can be like, this guy is going to be so flipping good. And he never ever is. He never gets it. And you're like, man, how do we miss on that guy? Why is that funny?
No, sorry. We're having our own conversation. Me and DeHuff.
Oh, you are?
Yeah. Sorry.
What are you guys talking about?
Listen,
it's probably more interesting.
Yeah, folks, I mean, DeHuff, Mark can hear you when you talk down the line to me. He can hear that.
Well, it's just,
I don't get distracted by it, I can just move right along. Mark, despite 30 years in television, somebody constantly yammering in his ear, apparently is thrown off.
I can't hear when DeHuff, in studio, I can hear when DeHuff talks to you. But, like, I can't hear when DeHuff is talking to you when I'm on remote.
Are you sure? Because we could test that right now. Ready?
Yeah.
Mike, you're an idiot!
Did you hear that?
See, I did hear that.
See,
oh,
awesome. See, I think Mark is a bit defensive here because when Mark is not here, mm-hmm. Okay, when he's in L.A. or New York, I think he gets a little bit worried about what exactly are these guys whispering about? What are they talking about in the background? I think your defensiveness comes to the surface because you're afraid we're going to play something like this.
Ah, there you are. I was beginning to give up on you. It's great to see you, man.
It's great to see you, O'Neill. It took me a while to get here from the airport. I get small town transportation. So this is Springfield.
This is it in all of its glory. You know what? Maybe you should do a little research while you're here. That way you can write your next book about a small town.
It's pretty, I can't remember what I was supposed to say.
That had nothing to do with anything. So what I didn't hear DeHuff. What I heard was you sounding like Schneidley with your little trying to not let your little chuckle out. And I could hear you snickering in the background, Mike. That's what I heard.
You heard me snickering?
Yes.
What did it sound like?
Yeah, exactly. It was like, it really reminded me of, like a little chubby kid that had a lollipop, and he was really excited about it.
See, he's obviously a little tubby kid.
Here's this defensiveness that I'm just talking about. Folks, can you hear it?
I heard the snickering.
Can you hear it? There's a little defensiveness there to Mark.
What were you two chatty Cathy snickering about?
Oh, I gave Mike this real hot take on hockey, and he was just
seriously.
So
all right. We'll get right back to the conversation, but this is too good. So DeHuff sends me a text. Because we just had this discussion about Nathan MacKinnon. Did he get robbed in the MVP voting?
Right.
And DeHuff sends me a text that reads, it was who was most valuable to their team. Both did a tremendous job getting the team to bounce back from a terrible season previously. And so down the talkback line, I said to DeHuff, I go, there's no way you came up with that.
Right?
No.
There's no way. And it turned out,
it's Gabe Gauthier.
A great hockey guy, Gabe Gauthier, who used to play at the University of Denver. Good hockey guy, great hockey guy. Sent that along to DeHuff, and DeHuff stole it as his own.
I can see why you were like a little fat kid snickering.
Right? I mean, as I read that, how in the world would that come out of DeHuff's mind?
No, DeHuff.
There's no way.
There is absolutely no way DeHuff could come up with that.
Hey, Stink, can you do Mike's chubby laugh when I say...
All right,
ready?
Get ready for a drop, everybody.
Everybody
be quiet so we get this nice and clean.
Hey, everybody. I have cake. Mike?
Oh my god!
I don't even know what happened there,
all right. That's okay. Yeah. That's okay. Right. I'll get it right back to where we were. So here's my problem with the whole mentoring thing, and it's an honest question based on years of observation. Why is it that the journeyman type quarterback, the one that's scrapping and fighting to get some sort of foothold in his profession, is the one that seems more willing to help other younger players along the way, while the established superstars, The guys that don't have to worry about job security, the guys that are on top of the world, that get the contracts, get the girls, and are, you know, the faces of their franchise and their league, they're the ones that have no interest in mentoring. I mean, the stories are all over the place.
Right.
Joe Montana, Steve Young didn't get along. Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. Brett Favre kind of sanctimoniously came out the other day and said, don't worry, Aaron understood why I didn't want to work with him. Tom Brady, Jimmy Garoppolo, friends off the field, but, you know, kind of cool on the field, to the point where Brady probably forced his dad, Bob Kraft, to get rid of Jimmy Garoppolo for nothing. So now the most recent example, Ben Roethlisberger and Mason Rudolph. So what is it? Why is it that guys like Case Keenum might be more likely to actually willingly reach out and be a mentor to a younger player as opposed to an established star?
You know, I have no idea. But it certainly, like you said, it certainly would seem that that's, you know, the case. And it's really interesting that guys that should have security, guys that should be A-OK with mentoring a guy, don't seem to want to do it. You know, who did we have on that essentially said, you know, as a quarterback, I had a real tough time, you know, kind of really rooting for a guy. I don't know if it's just part of that, if the quarterback culture, of if the insecurity, you know, it's always funny to me, and this is just a, you know, conversation that we're having, trying to hash something out. But why is it that teams don't want to have a quarterback competition? They don't want competition at that position. They don't want their quarterback looking over their shoulder. And yet at every other position, competition is great. We want competition. Right. We want to compete. Like, are quarterbacks mentally that soft?
Does it, well, while we're trying to psychoanalyze our way through this, is there something to the idea that even the great ones have they're driven by a fear of failure, that maybe that explains what makes them great in the first place, that there is some insecurity there that helps explain why they got to be great in the first place and it never really goes away? And that even when they're established, even when they're a star, but maybe they see the end coming and they all of a sudden become really, really, you know, paranoid about who's coming up to take their job. That paranoia never went away. Because think about it. I mean, it's well done. Let me ask you, now that we're talking about this, you probably saw it firsthand. How was John Elway with Brian Griese?
Because
my sense is that John had zero interest in mentoring Brian Griese.
See, here's the funny thing, and we've talked about this before. You are so compartmentalized as a football player. You're segregated by position that the interaction, like, I didn't pay any attention to that interaction. I think it was cordial. I don't know if it was, you know, I don't know if it was like real mentoring, but I'm not in those meetings. I wasn't around, you know, those meetings or those interactions. So the truth of the matter is I have no idea. I have no idea what that looked like behind the scenes.
No sense of how that, I mean, because you know that John and Bubby got along great.
John and Bubby got along great. So, but maybe they got along great because there was no threat there.
Right.
But like I said, I really don't, as far as John and Brian, I don't know. I mean, I didn't see them necessarily hanging out, but that doesn't mean it didn't happen.
But I'm not talking about the meeting rooms. I'm talking about out on the field, countless practices, walkthroughs when there was plenty of instruction going on. You know, Brian would take a rep, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
And you're standing back. I mean, come on, you have told us before that you used to take that time and observe quarterbacks. You talked about how it only took you about 15 minutes to realize
Right.
Heath Shuler, who was the fifth overall pick for the Redskins, couldn't play, and that Gus Frerotte would be better. You were right about that. So, I mean, I just, I'm not trying. Yeah. I'm not trying to get you to tell tales out of school. I'm just saying. You know, what did you see whenever you saw any kind of interaction between the two?
To the best of my knowledge, I mean, again, on the field, when we're on a football field doing those things, I am so locked into what I'm doing, and when my backup was in for me, to what he's doing, to what we're doing as a group, that's what I was paying attention to. I wasn't paying attention. I wasn't looking over and saying, you know, John Elway's having a conversation with Brian now. I didn't look at any of that stuff. Now, the reason I told you about the Heath Shuler story is because I'd already done. We were done for the day. Our work was done. So now it was watching first year and rookie guys that I'd never seen before. And so you're just watching from afar. We weren't behind like where you're watching your position. We were told as the veterans, go to the sideline. We're going to rerun this. So we're not like normally where you're behind everything watching your team. I was on the sideline watching that practice.
Hmm.
And so it was a completely different, scenario. It was a team driven deal, rookies on rookies type of thing. And so I'm not locked in like I normally would be locked. I'm locked in on other things at that point. But it's really interesting that you bring it up because I honestly don't have any real recollection of mentorship or conversations. I'm sure they probably happened. I'm sure they were cordial. I don't know if they were, you know, friendly or whatever. I don't have no reason to believe they wouldn't be. And I don't think John at that point in his career was threatened by Brian Griese or anybody else. So, you know, I guess the answer is I have no idea, but I just know that competition is always encouraged everywhere on the football field except at that position.
Well, I'm glad to know that you were locked in to practices because I thought you and Nalen just spent all your time having contests to see who could drink the most water weight.
We did that. That's being locked in. That's part of being locked in.
For those,
don't try to use my words against me.
Is this going to lead to another phone call tonight?
Yeah, I'm going to have to call you and say, dude, you really pissed me off.
Why don't you explain to people your water weight battles with Nalen? These are pretty funny. That's a pretty funny story.
All right.
This would be something you would do during a practice.
On Fridays, okay. Yeah. On Fridays, you know, we're a hat day on Fridays. And so we used to always have to weigh in on Thursday. And, you know, you had to weigh in. So, like, Tommy and I were always on the bottom end of the scale. Is like, I had a weight where I couldn't weigh less than 284 and I couldn't weigh more than 288 for 6 years here. I had to, every day that I stepped on the scale on Thursday, I had to be in there. And so, you know, there's different ways if you're a little bit light, like maybe you had a little bit of a cold and you're, you know, 82 or something, 282, to where you can manipulate your weight. So one of the things I used to always do is I'd get up on the scale, get close to the edge of the scale and kind of turn sideways, and our assistant strength coach would be doing the monitoring. Well, you could grab the scale with your finger on the back side of it where they couldn't, like it was on the side, but if you're up close, you can't see it. And then I could push with my finger and add a couple of pounds. You know, however many pounds I need to add, just the more pressure you put on, obviously the more you're going to weigh because it's going to, you know, that weight is going to push you down. So I would always manipulate the scale of what I needed to weigh. You know, I'd be right there. I never had to worry about being over. So that was, you know, the Thursday weigh-in. So Fridays, oftentimes, because we'd fudge the weight, we would do an official weigh-in before Friday practice. And then we'd see how much weight we could gain during practice. So, you know, you'd do whatever you were doing practice-wise. And then as soon as the defense was up, then, and we were running scout team on cards, then we'd just sit over there by the water jugs and see how much water we could drink. And I mean, it would be like an hour and a half practice, and you would drink so much water. And I mean, you're just busting, like your gut's busting. You gotta pee, but you gotta hold the whole thing and get through practice to see how much weight you could gain. And we did an official weigh-in on Friday before we went out to the practice field. And then we come right in after practice and see who gained the most weight. And it was a lot of fun. That's just
like how much?
Like eight pounds.
8 pounds of water during an hour and a half?
Yeah, 8 pounds, 8-9 pounds of water during an hour and a half practice. Yeah, easy.
Wow.
Oh yeah.
You crazy offensive lineman, you.
You know what that's called? That's just called hard work and talent.
Yeah.
That's what that's
good, clean fun right there.
Absolutely.
All right. So, somebody asked on the, ramoslaw.com text line, 303-713-1043. Why are we still talking about Paxton Lynch? The guy can't play. Hey, look. I can't believe we're talking about him as much as we are either. But isn't it clear that the organization still believes this guy could be the guy? To the point where we got guys, smart guys, well-connected guys like Alfred Williams coming on the other day, convinced that the plan is simply to have Case Keenum here for 2 years to keep the seat warm until Paxton Lynch is ready to take over and fulfill his promise of being a number one draft pick.
See, you know what? It's funny. Everybody that just looks at Paxton Lynch, one, you drafted him in the first round. He's got first round talent, but like he didn't have first round, he has first round tangibles. He doesn't have first round intangibles. Okay. You knew that it was going to take a while to develop the guy. You took him anyway. You tried to speed up the development. It didn't work. Obviously, not us, them. They still think that they can catch lightning in a bottle. They still think that through the proper development that he could play. They still think that there's an opportunity there. Like the Bronco country is like, oh, it's obvious he can't play. Well, it's not so obvious to them. They still believe there's a shot.
It's mind-boggling.
Maybe there's a chance. And so that's the direction they're going in.
But what? What are they basing that on?
Paxton's tall.
What have they seen that makes them think that this is anything more than just wishing and hoping? Because right now, this just seems like it's wishing, it's hoping, it's, hey, what do we got to lose? That's their vision of Paxton Lynch.
Sure.
Or are you telling me that there's something else concrete that they have looked at and said, keep working, keep this guy here, keep developing. Yeah. Trust me, it's gonna pop.
Here's the only thing that's concrete, Mike, is the guy is athletically, he's exceptionally talented. That's what's concrete. And I'm just telling you, and I've been around almost now 30 years involved in the NFL through playing and broadcasting. 30 years. 12 years of playing, 18 years of broadcasting. What is that? Is it? Yeah. That's 30, isn't it?
Math.
Is 30? 12 and 18?
Mm-hmm.
That's 30? Math. 28, 29, 30. Yeah. It is 30.
Well, yeah, it's 30.
Yeah, it's 30.
Mm-hmm.
So 30 years. Let me just restate that. 30 years I've been involved in the NFL.
There you go. You know what's even better?
What's that?
For over 3 decades,
ooh,
I've been involved in football.
That does sound good,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, listen, I've been involved in this game for
over a couple dozen years.
3 decades.
That's an inside joke.
Yeah, over the couple dozen years is not good. Over 3 decades, I've been involved in this game. This glorious game we call football. And I will tell you right now that talent, athletic ability and talent gets you opportunities that you haven't earned. Ooh. And they see talent, and they're going to continue to give that talent opportunities that it hasn't earned, because there's the hope that all of a sudden it the light goes on and that talent can actually produce.
There was also a move that the Broncos made this offseason that just doesn't jive with the idea that they believe in Paxton. Connect the dots, tell you about that next. You know, there's one flaw. Let's play what Alfred Williams had to say again, because it got a lot of people reacting. It started when Chad Brown, who was sitting in with him that day, you can hear his reaction in the background. I heard Zach and Stokely talking about it yesterday as I was driving around. Stoke was pretty opinionated about it. But here's what Al had to say.
What it really feels like to me is that the Broncos brought Case Keenum in here to mentor Paxton Lynch. The contract is structured so that at the end of 2 years, Case Keenum walks away, but that's at the same time the Broncos can go ahead and extend Paxton Lynch for 1 year. Everything is signaling that Paxton Lynch will eventually become the guy.
Here's the problem with all that. Gary Kubiak is much more involved in what's going on with the Broncos. Make no mistake about it. I think his fingerprints were all over the draft. I believe his fingerprints will be all over the offense during the course of the season. I think Gary Kubiak's role is expanding and his influence is felt. What do we know about Gary Kubiak in regards to Paxton Lynch?
I think what we know is that Gary is not a Paxton fan.
Correct. So much so that he snubbed the nose at the idea of, hey, if you draft a guy in the first round, you got to play him. No, you don't.
Mm-hmm.
We'll go with the guy in the seventh round. Beat him out. Then when it comes down to a meaningless regular season finale against the Oakland Raiders, yeah, both quarterbacks will play. And then halftime, Broncos are up. He's coaching what he knows will probably be his final game. He's like, I want to win. I'm going to stay with Trevor. Heck with Paxton. So if Gary is involved, as much as it seems he is, how does that jibe with the idea that the Broncos' grand plan is to pave the way for Paxton?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it doesn't.
Well, somebody needs to tell Al that. I'll let you do it.
Okay. You gonna put me on that?
Yeah, get to it. Chop, chop.
Yeah, Al. here's the deal. Yeah, I'm with you.
Or I could do it. I'll be like, shit, do you hear what Mark said?
Yeah, yeah. That guy is crazy. He just stirs the pot. Al, I don't know. I don't know.
Then I'll snicker.
Yes, I don't know what's happening there. That's exactly what you'll do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that part wouldn't make sense. Although, Gary would be, like, if, I gotta believe that one, Gary probably doesn't believe that Paxton is, you know, the guy. But with that said, I also gotta believe that if Paxton showed that he could play, Gary would gladly be like, good. I'm glad that, you know, he's finally shown up. You know what I mean? I mean, I sit there and think that Gary is like, he's not actively rooting against Paxton Lynch.
No, but it's clear he's not a big believer in him.
Well, that much is true. I will give you that. I believe that Gary doesn't believe that Paxton is the answer. Certainly not.
So I just wanted to bring that up.
Right.
Just want to make that observation. Just connect that dot, if we could. Hey, by the way, tonight on The Fan, 6:00, coverage of the NBA draft.
Mm-hmm.
You excited?
I am so looking forward to the NBA draft. I am on what we would refer to as pins and needles.
Sarcasm. Sarcasm. Sarcasm.
You're not?
No. There's a lot of trickle-down effects to what has gone on in the college game. and this is one of them, the negative effects, is that because so many players leave so early, you never really get a chance to get to know who these guys are.
Mm-hmm.
Because not many people follow college hoops during the regular season. They wait until the tournament. And then for the tournament, you get basically a, you know, a couple week crash course to know who some of these guys are.
Right.
But for a lot of these guys, you look at who'll be drafted tonight, and, you know, whereas with the NFL, there's a sense of, yeah, I know this guy. I watch this guy play.
Right.
More and more now with college basketball, the guys coming out into the draft, it's a lot of, who's this guy? Who's that guy?
Right.
I think I remember seeing that guy play. Oh, that name sounds familiar.
Right. Yeah, there's not a lot. There's not a lot of care. It's not like, you know, when you and I were growing up and you'd watch a guy play, you know, college basketball for, you know, for 3 or 4 years, and then all of a sudden he'd be coming, you know, it's not the Christian Leitners and the Bobby Hurleys and the Grant Hills and, you know, and all the guys that you came out, the Ralph Sampsons of the world that you watched, and you were like, oh wow, this guy's going to be great. Your guy, Ronnie Cicely, you know, like you used to follow them through college.
Sure. They were there. I mean, I went to
Ewing, Patrick Ewing. Yeah. I mean, how many years did you watch Patrick Ewing play? You were just like, yeah.
4 years.
Right.
He played 4 years. Yeah. I'm looking at NBADraft.net, you know, and their mock draft. And their mock draft has, I'll throw the question out because I know you haven't looked at it. How many seniors do you think they have going in the first round?
One.
Close. Two.
Two.
Chandler Hutchinson.
Oh, yeah. Hutch. I call him Hutch.
From Boise.
Yeah. Oh, Boise. Son of a...
And Grayson Allen.
Grayson.
From the Dukies.
The Tripper.
The Tripper. That's it.
That's it.
Otherwise, wow. It's just freshmen. I mean, right. It's just all freshmen. Couple sophomores, couple juniors, but, you know, that's about it. All freshmen.
Do you say sophomore or do you say sophomore?
Well... No, I say sophomore. The only guy that said sophomore was Keith Jackson, and he said it in a way that it would be a grave injustice for me or anybody else to even try to mimic it.
Right.
And he'd be like, a big sophomore. You know, and it'd be so cool. Like
yeah.
Only Keith Jackson could do. The big sophomore, rumbling, stumbling, you know, that kind of thing. I'm not going to try to do that.
You weren't even close.
No, I'm not I'm not even trying to.
It was embarrassing.
Well, do you want to try?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
They would be like, he would be sophomore. Where was it? The big, from?
He always loved those, like, Oklahoma tight ends. Like, who's the great tight end from Oklahoma?
It was Keith Jackson.
Keith Jackson, right. That's right. It's Keith Jackson. Talk about Keith Jackson.
He's a sophomore. Yeah. From, oh man.
So that's, yeah. That's what
yeah,
I'm
you're
saying.
Right. I can't really.
You can't do it.
Either.
Don't even bother.
Right.
Which, does bring us to the Nuggets, and they'll be picking 14th, tonight. And don't tell me that you can't get a good player at 14, because isn't that where Donovan Mitchell was picked last year by the Nuggets in a pre-planned trade with Utah, which I think some people need to be reminded. They did not draft Donovan Mitchell and then decide to trade him.
Yeah,
that would really look stupid.
Yeah, it was a deal that was agreed.
It was already agreed to before, so they were simply picking for Utah, picking Donovan Mitchell. But... Hey, look, you know, the Nuggets are a team that says they're a draft and develop organization. So when you are admittedly all about the draft, you can't whiff on Emmanuel Mudiay and you can't whiff on passing on Donovan Mitchell. You can't. No matter how much you try to tell your people, well, we got Jokic in the second round. Yes, you did. But if you're going to build the kind of team that's going to compete in the ultra competitive West, you can't just say, well, we got Murray. We got Jokic, you know, we got Gary Harris. You got to build out, you got to round out a team, and more than likely you're going to have to do it through the draft. So you can't miss like they have two of the last 3 years.
Agreed. You can't.
Draft coverage tonight on The Fan starting at 6 with a bunch of guys that you've probably never heard of. Feel the excitement. The biggest development in sports yesterday had nothing to do with a real sport. We'll explain next.
You got everything to lose. This guy's got nothing to lose.
I ain't got a choice.
That's the same thing your father said, and he died right here in my hands. Listen to me, this guy is dangerous.
But you don't think I could beat him?
Don't pretend this is about your father. I was telling you this before.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh.
The best story to come out of sports yesterday was the trailer for Creed 2 dropping.
I'm telling you what, it gave me a little tinkle shiver. That highlight. It's got a little
tinkle.
Have you seen
the actual trailer yet?
No, but I just, right there, just the sound gave me a tinkle shiver.
Get ready for another tinkle shiver, because you know what the...
Two tinkle shivers.
Do you know what the premise of this movie is? So, Creed, Apollo Creed's son...
Right.
...is going to be fighting Ivan Drago's son.
Shut your mouth.
That's right. Creed, Drago, again.
Oh, my
God. He does.
I wonder...
And even better?
Uh-huh.
Ivan Drago, Dolph Lundgren, is going to be in the movie.
You know...
Tinkle
shiver. You know what would even, like, your head would just pop off the top of your shoulders? If Mr. T was in the corner.
Get a Mr. T cameo?
A Mr. T cameo?
Just have him going, hey, woman!
Hey, woman!
Hey, woman! Listen here. Since you a man ain't got no heart, let's
see
a real man.
Oh, my Lord.
If I can change.
Yeah.
And you can change. Everybody can change.
They got the Gorbachev look-alike over there, sitting there, starting to slowly clap, you know?
Yeah, he gets the big stain on his head. Right, you get the big stain right there. Oh, my gosh. This is great news.
It's huge news.
Oh yeah, it's gigantic.
Because let's face it, when the first Creed movie came out, it was kind of like, but it was really good,
right?
And Michael B. Jordan is just such a crazy good actor, and
everybody can change.
And he was great in that first movie, and Sly was good in that movie, and they're doing it again, and the whole man, I can't wait.
It's gonna be it's exciting.
I have a feeling it could bring me back to the days of my youth when I would go into a Rocky movie and then come out and I would be shadow boxing.
I could just see you right now. Like, you got the hoodie sweat thing on. You know, all of a sudden you're up at like 3:30 in the morning. You suck down some raw eggs, and then You tie your sweatpants up just right underneath your boobs. You know, your boiler's kind of hanging down. Get that big Superdome gut going on. And you hit the streets, baby.
That's right.
You just hit the streets.
That's right.
Gonna go out there, get some work done.
And that lasts for like 2 days.
Yeah, two
and
days.
You're like, yeah, and then you're like, oh, that's hard.
Let me hit the snooze button. I'm exhausted.
Everybody can change.
Everybody. That's gonna be fun, though.
I know. I'm pumped. I watch the trailer. Trailer's
good. You know
good.
What would be?
Mrs. Huxtable plays Creed's mother.
Yes, she does.
Hey, woman! Listen here.
Wait a minute, you telling me you had kind of a...
Huh?
Mrs. Huxtable thing back in the day?
Oh, no.
I mean, when you talk about the great TV moms of all time, does she rank highly?
Yeah, she'd be... Mrs. Huxtable would be... I'm more interested in the stories Mrs. Huxtable has about Mr. Huxtable.
No.
Can we talk?
No.
How about new?
Run, don't walk. Warning, Mr. Robinson, warning. We gotta get away from that. Okay.
All right.
Where to go from here?
All right. Just kinda We were having fun, and then it just kind of put an end to it, huh?
How about
that escalated
those,
quickly.
How about those Rockies, huh? I don't know what to make of what Bud Black is doing. Is he now openly, you know, it's like the stubborn child, you know, where he just openly is defying you, almost like just daring you to punish him? Is he openly defying Rockies fans? Because he keeps sending Brian Shaw out. And yes, it worked last night. But don't try to tell me that that was actually a good move. Because when he was brought in, Brian Shaw, in the top of the fifth, in an 8-6 game that the Rockies were now trailing, with the bases loaded, nobody thought that this was a good move at the time. Now, it worked out, but it doesn't excuse the fact it was not a good move. But yet, he continues to go to this guy.
Well,
is this becoming almost just...
Okay, but listen...
Almost like a childlike stubbornness? Defiance?
If it works, though, Mike... So, we talked about it. Todd Frazier, righty on righty, 0-8 lifetime against Brian Shaw. Here's a matchup. If there's ever a matchup that you're going to feel confident, a guy that has zero confidence... But you're going to feel confident that you can get this guy out because you've done it so many times before. So this may be evil genius stuff. Like, if this actually works out, and none of us have a ton of faith in this, but if this actually works out, Bud Black becomes evil genius guy. If Brian Shaw can get his stuff back together and start being a reliable member of the bullpen, they need to find, like, okay, they have Adam Ottavino, super reliable. You gotta believe that Wade Davis will be reliable more often than not. Just based on history, he got his 100th save yesterday. Okay? So you gotta believe that, and he's got great stuff. You know, sometimes he gets a little bit wild, and you know, and you know, the wheels come off. But, you gotta believe that, you know, that he's gonna, more often than not, he's gonna be, you know, reliable. Nobody else in that bullpen is reliable. If Brian Shaw could become a reliable reliever, I mean, that'd be a big time thing. So, I don't know. I mean, I kind of look at it that way. And, you know, we could be looking back on this going, wow, Bud Black, you know, what a job he did continuing to hold true to his values and what he believes and what was going to happen. And it paid great dividends, showing confidence in guys that you shouldn't show any confidence in at all. It paid great dividends.
So,
what a fan.
Yeah. I got to ask you, as somebody who just recently put up 225 pounds 25 times, what is your immediate reaction when I tell you that Pritch and Cecil are going to be broadcasting live coming up next from Fitness Gallery off South Colorado Boulevard?
The crazy juxtaposition of those two in a fitness gallery. I want Cecil to be in a wrestling singlet and I would like Pritch to be in one of those 80s aerobics, like with the leg warmers.
Oh, yeah.
Tights.
Yeah. Go all Olivia Newton-John. Let's get physical.
Oh. That's a great tune.
Mm-hmm.
Olivia Newton-John was.
And with that image, we leave you. Cecil and Pritch from Fitness Gallery coming up next.